So Paul is writing to the church at Colossae, the church that he didn't plant, one that he didn't know personally. His main connection with the church is through one of his fellow workers, Epaphras, who seems to have been instrumental in planting the church in that city. But Paul has clearly heard a good deal about the church, and what he has heard has impressed him. He speaks warmly of their faith and love, their faith in Christ, their love for all the saints. And then Paul goes on to pray for them. And part of his prayer for these Christians is that they will keep on growing. Specifically, he prays in verse 10 that they will keep on growing in the knowledge of God. And I want to explore this morning what it might mean for us to keep on growing as Christians. Someone has said of life, if we don't change, we don't grow. And if we don't grow, we aren't really living. Growing is part and parcel of what it means to be alive. And if we want to live life at its best, we will always be growing in one way or another. It's true of life in general, and it is more true of the Christian life. If we don't grow, we aren't really living. The Christian life at its very best is a constant adventure, a constant discovery, a constant opening up of new avenues of service, of new ways of experiencing God's presence in our lives. And yet it is so easy to stagnate, to stop growing, to come to a point in life where we think we have arrived. No more growing to do, no more change and development to take on, no new things to learn. The problem, of course, is that growing old is compulsory, but growing up is optional. All that goes with growing old will continue to happen to us, whether we like it or not. But just because we look more mature, show the signs of experience, the signs of wear and tear, doesn't mean that we have grown up in any meaningful way. We have to choose whether through life's experiences we will allow ourselves to keep on developing and learning or growing, or whether we think we have reached our peak and there's no more to grasp onto. Children and young people, of course, grow physically, mentally, and emotionally at a rapid pace. Growth is very much part of their experience, and it's sometimes difficult to keep up with them. But because of that, it's sometimes easy to think that the idea of growing is really only for the young. And adulthood is a time when growth is stopped and we can now settle down to some kind of equilibrium. But while growth may be more rapid when we are young, in all sorts of ways, it is important to keep on growing and developing as people. And the same thing happens with Christian faith. When we first of all make our steps of commitment in following Jesus, we soak in a huge amount about what the gospel means to our lives. We learn a great deal about God and what it means to trust him, about the way of love. And inevitably, that kind of rate of growth can't keep on being sustained. We have to settle down a bit. But what's important is that we don't stop growing. We may grow differently as we move on in years, but growth should always be a part of the Christian experience. We have to be aware that some Christians just get to a point and they stop growing. Unfortunately, some make that point where they stop growing, their point of making a Christian commitment, either through becoming a church member or being baptized. They think it's a kind of graduation. They've now arrived, they now settle down, and they just carry on as they always have done. You've made it. That's not what Christian faith is about. Some Christians keep on learning and growing beyond that point, but then they come to a point in their lives where everything becomes comfortable. They become set in their ways, as if there's no more to learn. There's no more growing to do. All of that stuff's in the past. But we need to grow because growing is all about learning more of God. Paul's prayer is that these Christians will grow in their knowledge of God, and surely we can never come to an end point in our knowledge of God. If we've stopped growing and being stretched in our Christian faith, what does that say about God and our relationship with God? A lot of fun is sometimes made of academics in universities who end up studying very obscure things. I came across a list of obscure academic papers. Some of the things that have been studied by academics include these. Some researchers at a veterinary college in Toulouse in France carried out a study to discover whether dog fleas or cat fleas are able to jump the highest. You'll be interested to know that dog fleas jump both higher and further than cat fleas. No idea what you do with that information. A philosopher at the University of California wrote a paper with the question, do ethicists steal more books? He had discovered that in the university library there, the books on ethics were more likely to disappear than on any other academic subject. You would have thought that those people who are studying ethics would be more honest than everybody else, but apparently they're not. And then again in the University of California, an ophthalmologist studied woodpeckers, trying to find out how woodpeckers avoid getting headaches. With all of that banging of their beaks into the trunks, how do they stop getting headaches? I think the conclusion was they've got smaller brains than a lot of have, and so they don't get as bad headaches. Some research spends a lifetime's work getting to know one tiny aspect of this world. We've been watching Judi Dench's Wild Borneo adventure. In the last episode that we watched, Judi Dench met a scientist who spent her time researching the dung beetle. And her fascination in this creature that kind of sorts out all of the dung in the forest was quite infectious. If the life of the dung beetle is full of fascination, how much more should the life of God be full of fascination to us? God, who warrants our constant desire to learn more and more about him. If ever we think that we've got God summed up and sorted out, then we are doing God the greatest of disservice. To stop growing is to admit that we have become disinterested in God. Because to be interested in this God who is full of mystery, who will always be beyond our understanding, well, he will always draw us out beyond from where we are now. He will always stretch us. We will want to discover more and more and more about his intent for our lives, what his love means, what it means to live in this world in response to his love. And when we talk about growing in our knowledge of God, we are talking about so much more than an intellectual kind of learning. We should certainly bring our minds to the game of growing in knowledge of God. But this is not first and foremost an intellectual exercise. On this point, I think Christians get this wrong on two fronts. Either we end up making the Christian faith too intellectual, and we overemphasize the intellectual element of our relationship with God. And this immediately means that those who are good with words, those who love ideas, are given some kind of special privilege in the church. And those who are not so good with words and ideas are made kind of second-class citizens. They're always having to catch up. That's quite wrong. This approach to Christianity ignores the comment by Jesus when he says, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. sometimes the little children have greater wisdom than the adults. But the other mistake that we make as Christians is to leave our brains at home whenever we come to church. Over the years, I've known people who are extremely sophisticated in the way in which they think about things in their daily lives. But when it comes to their Christian faith, they seem not to engage their minds. They become extremely gullible. All common sense, all critical thinking goes out of the window. But we do need to recognize that our growing in knowledge is not a purely intellectual thing. We don't grow simply by reading more or studying God and the Bible and the Christian faith more. Paul uses other words in this passage to stand alongside knowledge. In verse 9, he prays that God would fill them with knowledge of his will through all spiritual wisdom and understanding. Wisdom and understanding. Wisdom is very different to intellectual knowledge. Knowing all sorts of things is one thing. Being clever, having a high IQ, having a quick mind is one thing. But having wisdom is totally different. Wisdom is much more intuitive. It is about how we respond to the real world. It's how we respond to people. There are a number of quotes that illustrate the difference between wisdom and knowledge. I'm not sure who Anthony Douglas Williams is, but he said this: knowledge comes from learning, wisdom comes from living. And wisdom about God comes from living in the presence of God. And Sandra Carey has says, never mistake knowledge for wisdom. One helps you make a living, the other helps you make a life. And here's a very practical one. Knowledge is realizing the street is one way. Wisdom is looking in both directions anyway. The kind of knowledge that helps us grow is the kind of knowing that brings with it deeper wisdom and understanding of God and the world around us. It's not so much about facts and ideas about God. It's really about getting to know God better, getting to know ourselves better, getting to know this world better. It is earthed because it enables us to live our lives more meaningfully, because we will grow in the knowledge of his will. This is a growing that has practical consequences for the way in which we live our lives and relate to the world. Paul prays this prayer for the Colossians, not so that they will become cleverer people when it comes to thinking about God, but so that they will become people who live lives that are worthy of God, bearing fruit in every good work. Before ever our growing in knowledge of God is about an intellectual exercise, it is about a personal encounter with God. It is about getting to know God, spending time with God, listening to God, contemplating God's presence, reflecting on God, allowing ourselves and our way of thinking to be shaped and molded by God, which is why Paul talks about this being spiritual wisdom and understanding. This is wisdom that comes through the movement of the Spirit as we open ourselves to the presence of God in our lives. This is wisdom that is given more than it is gained. And it comes through personal encounter. Now, you can get to know someone by reading about them. Perhaps you might read somebody's biography or autobiography. In this way, you might get to know a huge number of facts about them. You might even be able to build up some kind of picture of the kind of person that they are. But you wouldn't be able to say that you know them until you've actually met them, until you've spent time with them, until you've been in their company. And indeed, someone who has never read their biography or autobiography, who knows far fewer facts about them, might know them better than you simply because they have been in their company. spiritual wisdom and understanding is this kind of knowing of God. Spending time in his presence, being with him and being open to him. And this needs to be growing all the time. And all of the Bible study in the world will not help us grow if we do not spend time in company with God and make ourselves vulnerable to his presence and influence on our lives. This kind of growing is open to each one of us, and it's open to us throughout our lives. I chose Psalm 92 to accompany this reading this morning because of how it ends. The psalmist says, "The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like the cedar of Lebanon," an image of growth. "We planted in the house of the Lord, they will flourish in the courts of God." And then this verse, "They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green." This growing is not something that stops with old age. This growing and flourishing is something, when it is about growing in God, carries on. Even though our bodies begin to fail us and even though everything else begins to wither away, this growing with God carries on. "They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green." The flourishing and growing of the people of God does not stop at 18 or 21 or when you hit middle age or when you come to retirement or when your body is giving up on you. This growing into a deeper appreciation of who God is, who he calls us to be, this deeper trust, this deeper love, this deeper sense of awe and wonder, this should follow us through all of our lives. It will take different dimensions at different times. But to keep on going in the Christian faith is to keep on growing in the Christian faith. And it doesn't mean that things will always get more straightforward for us. When I first made a Christian commitment, I think things were pretty black and white for me. But part of my growing in my knowledge of God has been growing in the mystery of God. It's not just that I had to recognize that not only is this world black and white, but there are shades of grey. Having worked out that there are some shades of grey, I then had to discover that God works not in a black and white and grey world, but in a multicoloured world. And so the mystery got even greater. And then I began to realise that the spectrum that God sees in is greater than the narrow spectrum that I see in. And so this growing in God has to keep on going. So the challenge this morning is to keep on going with God and to keep on growing in God. For there is no end to the wonder of God and what he means for our lives.